is releasing his second solo record that draws upon the moody spirit of his rain-soaked Portland home to create an eclectic brew of dreamy folk pop, cinematic indie rock, and enigmatic storytelling. The Colin Trio will also be featured. Again, that's the Robin Jackson Portland album release with the Colin Trio on November 11th at 9 p.m. at the Secret Society, 116 Northeast Russell Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the second annual Know Your City Gala, Untold Stories, on Thursday, November 16th at 5:30 p.m. at the EcoTrust Event Space in Portland. Untold Stories is Know Your City's second annual benefit gala, and it raises essential funds to further Know Your City's programs of engaging everyday Oregonians in the history, culture, and civics of the region. This year's gala will bring together over 150 guests for an unforgettable evening, including hors d'oeuvres, drinks, dessert, performances from local talent, and a paddle raise. Again, that's the second annual Know Your City Gala, Untold Stories, on Thursday, November 16th at 5:30 p.m. at the EcoTrust Event Space, 721 Northwest 9th Avenue, Suite 200 in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program, and I'm going to get right to the content because we have so much to talk about today and just an hour to talk about it. I want to talk about what's being called fake news, and it's really black propaganda. Media Matters, in an article by Alex Kaplan, says that Google is continuing to allow the monetization of fake news via its advertising network AdSense, this time surrounding the November 5th mass shooting in Sutherland Springs, Texas. Advertising networks Rev Content and Content.ad are also featuring advertisements on fake news stories about the attack. Now, I want to frame this for you before I get back to the text of what Alex Kaplan wrote. I asked myself, as many of us did, after the Trump victory, and many of us found out some of the really screwy ideas that, millions of people, especially in what are contemptuously called the flyover states, the ideas that millions of people had about Barack Obama, about life and the world in general, just bizarre ideas. And we knew some of them had been directly taken advantage of by Trump in his candidacy. For example, I mean, he didn't even have to say it because he was known as one of the big promoters of the idea that Barack Obama was not a U.S. citizen, that he was a secret Muslim. And those ideas, pardon me while I adjust equipment here. Those ideas, as it turns out, were not, as I initially suspected, simply things that are circulated using the internet amongst people who preferred to believe it. They were pushed, and in some cases we know now, by Russian-based groups, firms, that were evidently, given the context, I suspect, were acting out the revenge that Putin spoke of years ago against the U.S. for its very extensive trolling, malicious dabbling, its efforts to undermine Russian and Ukrainian society that go back many, many years, even before the internet, with the CIA, Paul Weyrich and the NED, for example, would go around Russia and pay $50,000 to complete cranks like Boris Yeltsin and give them power. So that sort of revenge thing was happening. But what I didn't understand is how well targeted these things are. The fact that Google and Facebook and other corporations can make good money and are making good money right now today by spreading the most ridiculous crap. And the way it works is these things, these stories that are pleasing, the word is specious. These lies that are pleasing to frightened and ignorant people are spread as ads. So returning to the article from Media Matters, on November 5th, a gunman opened fire and killed at least 26 people at a church in Sutherland Springs, Texas. The alleged gunman was court-martialed while in the Air Force in 2012 on charges of assaulting his wife and child, and has been accused of stalking ex-girlfriends. Law enforcement officers are now saying that the shooting was related to a domestic situation, but a Media Matters search found that Google's ads sent supplied advertisements for many websites pushing the fake news that Kelly was a member of an anti-fascist group, Antifa, with many seeming to base their pieces on a fake news article from prominent fake news website, Your News Wire. And again, speaking for myself, you may be familiar with Your News Wire, just blatant, false, as I was saying, specious crap, which is put out just in, as a purely evil way of making money. Other websites they list include Real Pharmacy, that's F-A-R-M-S-E, USN Politics, MyInfoNews.net, Clear Politics, SBV News, Red State Watcher, and Truth Feed. Some of these websites, he writes that were using AdSense, such as Clear Politics and SBV News, also carried advertisements from Content.ad, while Truth Feed also featured advertisements from Rev Content. Other websites not using AdSense that published the baseless claims, such as Conservative Fighters, The Conservative Truth, and BornToBeRight.com, featured advertisements from Rev Content or Content.ad instead, including the Your News Wire piece. That article went viral, drawing at least 235,000 Facebook engagements within almost 24 hours of the attack, according to social media analytics BuzzSumo, and was shared on gun parts manufacturer Mullen Labs Industries' Facebook page. Another false claim about the shooting came from Freedom Junction, that's J-U-N-K-S-H-U-N, a satire website run by a man whose made-up stories have been used by fake news websites to misinform. It claimed that the shooter was an atheist on the payroll of the Democratic National Committee, and that article was funded via advertisements from AdSense and Content.ad. And fake news website Freedom Daily, which has repeatedly violated AdSense rules against race-based incitement of hatred, published the false claim that the shooter was a Muslim convert named Samir al-Hajid. AdSense advertisements funded that article. So there's more to the article. You can find it at MediaMatters.org, but this sort of thing is working into the confused and frightened psyches of white conservative males, of conservative evangelical societies. It's telling them what they want to hear. It's stirring them up, and it's making good money doing it, and Google is profiting from it. So there's this incredibly sick black propaganda motive going out. This is I should think, given the alienation, the consumer alienation of the American population right now, this is a worse situation than what held sway more than 100 years ago, when various yellow journalism newspapers, and also very insular newspapers that were printed, for example, only to Germans or to very small groups, would just print whatever they decided was pleasing, and it would be taken as truth. And so now, ironically, we have the internet, and we can find out if you have some education and if you have some sophistication, you can find out what's going on in the world easier now than you ever could. And I certainly can verify that as someone who has dug up the news you're not supposed to know for 30 years now, 31 years. And for me, it used to be a matter of listening to shortwave and going to international newspaper stands. And now it can be found so much more easily with a web search. Well, now we see the dark side of that. And it's also, there's a, the mind control aspects of this should be frightening to you, because as I reported last week, or I should say as I repeated, since I didn't do the original journalism, as I repeated last week, news aggregators, Google and Facebook, are directly pinching off left opinion and calling left opinion fake news. Now, what I was just talking about was directly fake news. This stuff is BS. There's not one iota of truth to it, and it is made up to be false. That is fake news, false news, whatever you want to call it. Black propaganda is what it used to be called. Stuff intended to stir people up. But instead of shutting that down, Google and Facebook and other corporations, and these corporations that are making money from this more directly, they're doing their thing, while Alternet and The Intercept and Mother Jones and left news sites are being cut off using web trafficking algorithms, to the point that Alternet, for example, reported 1.2 million drop in readership. 1.2 million drop in clicks, and this is a website that has built up its traffic for many, many years to get where it's at, and it's been a long, slow rise for them, and it's because they've been doing good work, and they are reliable, and there's really good stuff on alternet.org. But now, instead of finding links to that circulated as easily as it used to be on, say, Facebook or whatever social media you're using, computers are downvoting that. So now you have to remember KBOO.FM. Now you have to remember alternet.org. Now you have to remember theintercept.org. And so I charge you, remember, bookmark, find all your favorite sites. Just pull them up, bookmark them, because you're fighting computers now to see that information at all, and it's very easy to forget that they exist. WSWS.org, for example, Trotskyist site. Whatever you think of Trotskyist, it's an excellent site, and its news is quite reliable. Its opinion sometimes, you know, it's a little at variance with my own, but so what? It's a very useful, it's a resource for you to know what's going on in the world. WSWS.org. It's to the point, for example, that I pulled up The Intercept on a search bar, and one of the things that was brought up was something that was putting down The Intercept as fake news. So I'm putting out this warning to you now in the Trump era, on top of all the other oppression and repression that is coming out of that frightened 30 million people that are the core base. On top of everything else, there is this electronic censorship and misdirection. Watch out for it. Know it. Understand it. So directly now to some of the news you're not supposed to know. Derek Thompson writes in The Atlantic, on yesterday afternoon, the New York Times reported that AT&T and Time Warner, in order to win government approval of their $85 billion merger, are under pressure from the Justice Department to sell off either DirecTV or Turner Broadcasting, the group of cable networks that includes CNN. A different report in the Financial Times, however, claimed that the Trump administration is focused on the sale of CNN specifically. The latter news sparked concerns that President Trump, who has long berated CNN as fake news, was punishing the company for its critical coverage of his administration. Indeed, for any president to use the Department of Justice to punish enemies, whether individuals or companies, would be the stuff of authoritarians. And Derek Johnson writes, there are two fishy details about the Department of Justice objections. First, Malkan Delrahim, Trump's handpicked head of antitrust at the Justice Department, had previously announced that this merger would be acceptable. The fact that he changed his mind while working for the White House, for this White House, suggests to some that the administration may have inspired the policy change. Peter Kafka, how's that for a name, media reporter at Recode, called the possibility chilling. Secondly, it's doubly startling for a Republican administration to suddenly reverse several decades of party leniency, and speaking for myself, it ain't just leniency, but party leniency on just these sort of mergers, particularly with the president's favorite target, CNN, hanging in the balance. So this is more. of that sort of censorship, and this is a bit more direct, although well hidden, and that article is in The Atlantic. It's by Derek Thompson. Pull up The Atlantic, because I suspect you're not going to find direction to it on the web as easy as you did. Speaking again on the situation more generally, this is why you need community radio. You need community radio. Yes, you do. I do, and you do. Now, in honor of the new Trump-era sanctions against Cuba, I'll now read a couple of items from Radio Havana, Cuba. That way you can listen to it on KBOO and not have to pull up Radio Havana, Cuba and get tracked. You better believe you will be. They write, if the writer Ernest Hemingway lived, President Donald Trump would forbid him to take a daiquiri at the Ambos Mundo Hotel in Havana as of this Thursday. The Americans who visit Cuba will not be able to stay in certain hotels, consume some products, or visit certain establishments related to companies under the management of the military sector of the island. The Treasury Department and the government published the new regulations that implement the presidential memorandum announced by Trump in the city of Miami in June when he met with the most radical sector of the Cuban-American community. The State Department published a list of all agencies subject to sanctions and ensures that it will keep it updated. Among the vetoed entities are CEMEX and GAESA, corporations that manage from retail and shipping stores to car and jewelry rentals. In addition to Ambos Mundos, other iconic hotels such as the Telegrafo and the newly opened Apple Kempinski are also banned for Americans. New regulations also affect more than 100 hotels, shops, and marinas in Havana, Santiago de Cuba, Varadero, Pinar del Rio, Baracoa, Holguin, and the Keys of Villa Clara. Americans must now differentiate between Varadero rum, which is subject to sanctions, and Havana Club, which is allowed so far at the risk of violating the laws of their country. And speaking for myself, I think that's kind of funny. I mean, I suspect really that the reason the distinction in that one particular case is because Havana Club is so damn good they just couldn't countenance not not allowing it on the list. So the sneaky list, and the sneaky list is happening. And so if you go to Cuba, you'll have to be aware of that. Or you'll have to be aware of dodging it. I went to Cuba, thank you KBOO listeners, in 1996. And ever since then, I have been harassed while in airports. When I came back, I was searched and searched. And the airplane that I came back in, that I transferred from in Dallas, was emptied on a terrorist bomb threat. That's how silly it is. And even today, I am often shuttled into a separate line to get extra search. I had a policeman ask me, you know, what did I do to get on the special list by which, you know, what criminal act did I commit? And I was actually able to get him to laugh it off. And I told him directly, I said, no, I'm on this list because I went to Cuba once. So that's the way it is, and increasingly, because Trump is in power. So here's another item from Radio Havana, Cuba. Almost 2,000 soldiers from Brazil, Colombia, and Peru are participating in a military drill with the support of the United States in the Brazilian Amazon, which they claim is in preparation for humanitarian emergency actions. Now, speaking for myself, that should make you jump. The exercises are attended by 1,500 troops from Brazil, 150 from Colombia, 120 from Peru, and 30 from the United States. According to Hispan TV, about 10 military members are from Canada, France, Great Britain, and Japan, also part of the drill. The Brazilian Defense Ministry said this was a logistical exercise unprecedented in South America and will take place November 13th in Tabatinga, a town in the Brazilian state of Amazonas. The U.S. participation stirred controversy inside Brazil's lower house during a debate on military exercise, especially from parties opposed to Temer's government, speaking for myself, a very corrupt government. Glauber Braga, the leader of the Socialist and Freedom Party, said the measure could represent the possibility of loss of sovereignty and subordination to the United States. So there's more to the article on Radio Havana, Cuba. Brazil refused to participate in the coordinated joint military exercises after many critics expressed concern that it will serve as a pretext for the establishment of an international military base in conjunction with the United States in this region. Now, this is really about aggression against Venezuela. This is why you should know that this exercise has happened. This is about physically, militarily confronting Venezuela and stealing back the oil profits that the Venezuelans arrogantly and viciously assumed were their own just because the oil's under their land. So they are to be punished for that foolishness. Worse, as I was saying in an article on the news, an opinion article on the news earlier this week, coltan, the stuff in your cell phone, has been found in Venezuela, so God help them now. From Demand Progress, another website that you should bookmark, they're talking about the Paradise Papers. They sent out a general email, maybe you saw it, quoting part of their email, an expose of nearly 13 million documents has revealed just how billion-dollar corporations have hidden their money overseas to shirk U.S. taxes. The leak termed the Paradise Papers show that Apple alone has hidden more than $120 billion in profits offshore, and if the Trump GOP tax bill in the House passes, Apple will be handsomely rewarded for its deceptive practices. The Trump GOP plan introduced in Congress last week would allow corporations that hold huge offshore tax shelters to pay a fraction of the taxes that American-based businesses are required to pay. When Trump announced his tax blueprint, he touted how much the middle class would benefit, saying, "It's not good for me, believe me." But as it turns out, Trump and his billionaire corporate friends will benefit if this plan passes. Corporations that have used offshore tax shelters to hide profits, such as Apple, Amazon, GE, and ExxonMobil, will pay only 10% of the money they should have been paying 35% on in the first place. The alternative minimum tax that stops billionaires from paying no income tax will be repealed. The dynasty tax will be repealed, allowing Trump's kids to inherit his billions tax-free, and the top tax bracket will drop. Now, I did something there. I called the inheritance tax the dynasty tax. It's what the conservatives call the death tax. It doesn't even kick in over millions of dollars. It applies to a fraction of 1% of the population. You will never pay the dynasty tax. But that's what it should be called. If the right wing is calling it the death tax and pretending that, oh, farmers will be hurt. I heard a local conservative, Lars Larson, just the other day saying that, the death tax is terrible on farmers. This is just a ridiculous lie. The dynasty tax is important not because of not just because of the funds that it could raise, but because it stops dynasties. And we are increasingly being ruled by dynasties. The Koch brothers are a dynasty. The Waltons that own Walmart, billionaire dynasties, people who have never worked a day in their lives, never had to. Never will. So this email is referring to something that you should memorize. You should pull up guardian.co.uk, because as I was saying, now that the algorithms have changed to direct your mind away from defiance, now that you've been directed away from the truth by the new controllers of the internet, you need to memorize things. You're going to have to use your mind. You're going to have to keep things in mind. You're going to have to bookmark certain sites, and the Guardian should be among them, because whereas it's a capitalist institution, the Guardian publishes some very interesting and useful information about the United States. And they have reporters here. Bless them. And the name of this expose of 13 million documents, which I also encourage you to memorize, please, is the Paradise Papers. Now, we should be talking about the Paradise Papers. This should be big news in the United States. It should be on the news roll. It should be talked about on CNN. It should be talked about by major news distributors. And so far, it is not being talked about. And this is what Demand Progress is talking about, the Paradise Papers. 13 million documents, a huge leak by some hero somewhere who wanted the world to know just exactly how and how badly it's being screwed by tax-dodging corporations. So please remember this. Paradise Papers have shed light, according to The Guardian, on the offshore dealings of some of the world's richest people and biggest companies. Here's some of the more important things we've learned from the leak of 13.4 million documents. And by the way, The Guardian has pages and pages and pages about this, and it's worth a read. But here's just a little excerpt. Donald Trump's cabinet members, advisors, and donors have extensive offshore dealings. A firm owned by Vladimir Putin's son-in-law made substantial payments to the shipping group of the U.S. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, and that will be affecting the machinations against Donald Trump. which I'm not really happy about. I mean, Trump should be confronted on his fascism and his corruption, certainly. But the Democratic Party is using what power it has to confront him over his Russia connections. I think that should fall down the agenda. But never mind. Back to the list about the Paradise Papers. Twitter and Facebook have received hundreds of millions of dollars in investments that can be traced back to Russian state financial institutions. Top U.S. universities are hiding money offshore, with some of the money going into fossil fuel industries. The man managing Angola's sovereign wealth fund invested in projects he stood to profit from, so it's not just the United States, it's not just Britain. This is how the world's elite rule us. This is how they impoverish our governments for what good the governments can do by hiding billions and billions, excuse me, trillions. Trillions of dollars. It's been estimated at $13 trillion on previous revelations. Probably it is higher. And the point that I want to make by bringing this up is that there's plenty of money to change the world and to make it better and to distribute wealth in a rational way. And is being hidden. Is being hidden by these billionaires. Apple secretly moved part of its empire to the island of Jersey after Ireland tightened its tax rules. The London-listed multinational Glencore made a secret loan to an Israeli billionaire in its efforts to secure lucrative mining rights in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, the undemocratic, exploited, destroyed, sadly rich in resources Republic of the Congo. Celebrities from Harvey Weinstein to Shakira have offshore interest hiding those taxes. A private equity firm aimed to extract £890 million from a struggling home care operator by making it take out a costly loan. All these things are in the Paradise Papers. And again, this is news that you're going to have to dig out yourself. The Paradise Papers, getting the dirt on the billionaires and just exactly how they suck money out of the population. Now, turning to some local news, on November 8th, 2017, a letter signed by 23 organizations and a prominent Portland area survivor of unwarranted spying was presented to Portland City Council. This is from Portland Cop Watch. And they are asking the Portland police to get out of the Joint Terrorism Task Force, which you'll hear referred to as the JTTF. Since the late 1990s, Portland police have been working with the JTTF, an FBI-led coalition of law enforcement, which includes Immigration and Customs Enforcement, that is ICE, the IRS, Homeland Security, and local police. The FBI and partner agencies have been targeting Muslims, immigrants, the Black Lives Matter movement, and other activists. This is COINTELPRO-type stuff. Returning to the article, between 2004, Portlanders, you may recall, organized to get the Portland Police Bureau to remove its full-time officers from the Joint Terrorism Task Force, succeeding in 2005. And again, speaking for myself, the reason this is important is because the ideological enforcement of conservative administrations is expressed through the FBI and right into the police force. This directly affects how much illicit oppression you will experience. And it's very important that this sort of thing be brought up into the public mind. But the city council is very good at saying thank you very much and moving on to the next agenda item. And this is just exactly what they did. But it's happening. And you need to know that the Joint Terrorism Task Force is working with the Portland police, and the city council so far is okay with it. There's more information on that at Cop Watch, Portland Cop Watch. So urge you to pull up Cop Watch at Portland Cop Watch. Pull up PortlandCopWatch.org. Well, the time is 9:27 Pacific. You're listening to KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. This is the news you're not supposed to know. Last week, I had a conversation with a prominent journalist, someone I very much admired. At the end of the show, I brought up sexual harassment because he had just published an apology for his previous sexual aggression in print. I asked my interviewee to speak to other men by saying what advice he would have, you know, because he had done this apology, because I held him in high esteem. I asked him to take this extra step. What advice would he have? I asked him for a young man who was taken in by the sort of sexist tripe that he had previously written. I wanted him to denounce locker room talk, and I made it as easy as I possibly could by admitting that I had engaged in that sort of thing. And it's true. back in 1985, sitting in the ARC Housing and Food Cooperative, which I later became the director of in Austin, Texas. I would sit on the couch, which we called SDRR, and talk about my sexual contest, blah, 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 my sexual conquest, because I was trying to make the point that I was a manly man and really, really trying to hide the fact that I'm actually transgender. So, you know, how ironic is that? How painful is that maybe to bring out? Not nearly as painful as being targeted by that sort of talk. But I asked him to talk about that and to denounce it in that way. What would he say? I asked him twice. And I was disappointed when he failed that test. I'm not mentioning his name here now because this isn't about him. This is about what it is to have a male role in the society and what it is to experience the constant, unceasing aggression against women and girls in the society. Now, I was just talking with Derek, the Morning Public Affairs Director here at KBOO, who is engineering. Thank you very much, Derek. In the hall before this show, and he was pointing out that male dominance talk, conquest talk, or whatever you call it, isn't limited to locker rooms. Feel free to break in here if you feel like if I'm off the mark here, Derek. But we talked about how the male identity is wrapped up in that sort of aggression, just as white identity is inextricable from microaggressions. This is a very, very important topic because it affects the lives and deaths of half the population of the planet Earth, 51%. In fact, and in my opinion, it is where the human mind is first conditioned to accept arbitrary and oppressive hierarchies in the first place. This is something that we all experience as humans. This is global. It's patriarchy I'm talking about, and I want to talk about it with you. Now we have half an hour left, and it's time for you to call in. I don't want to just talk to men about this, but I do want to talk to men and to women about sexism, about patriarchy. I want to dedicate the rest of the show to this topic. So here's the number to call in, 503-231-8187. I've talked about Me Too. I'm talking about patriarchy. I'm talking about sexism. I'm going to talk about rape. Number to call, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. Now, I have been granted, in terms of my perspective, a great gift. It's a perspective on the genders that is only available to transgender persons, only available to someone who's lived in both roles. Till 2001, I lived as male. After 2001, in April 2001, and publicly I announced my change, I have lived as a woman. And I still use my baritone voice on the air, so don't let it fool you. I am a woman. I am Teresa Mitchell. I am not trying to say that gender binary is legitimate, but I'm just using the dichotomy as a springboard for discussion. The Me Too meme has brought out many, many stories. It offers a tiny and quickly disappearing opportunity to address patriarchy, and so I say, leap on this. Call me now, 503-231-8187. I think of patriarchy as a vast and powerful locomotive, and its train of cars. It stretches for miles. It's moving at a tremendous rate. It's moving at 100 kilometers an hour. And Me Too made it slow down for 5 kilometers per hour. Impressive. Impressive. Something that this massive momentum did not expect. Something which causes it pause. Something which did not stop it. And all men who want to keep things going, all men have to do, that the oppressing faction has to do is just ignore it, just because the train will keep rolling. There's that much momentum. But it was slowed. This train of patriarchy was slowed, and I'm asking you to double down and triple down and fight, because here's a little opening. Leap to the fight. And I characterize it as a fight, but I believe in call-in culture, not call-out culture. Call-out culture has its place, certainly. But it also has an aspect that it's easy to pose. It's so easy to pose. And one of the reasons I was so mad about this discussion yesterday is because that sort of dodge weaponizes patriarchy. It's the worst. It's the guy who's really a feminist, and he's really on your side. He talks a good talk, When push comes to shove, you can't trust him. And men, this is something that you lose in a huge, huge way. You're not trusted by women. And as a transgender gal, I can tell you, it's very different on the other side. I remember the first time I was passing, even if I was just passing as transgender, I remember the first time I was walking down the street and I looked at a woman's face as she walked towards me and I kind of smiled at her and she smiled back and I was like, oh my God, I've never seen that. I had never seen that. Never. And you won't either, guys, because they can't trust you. Women cannot trust you even to the point of smiling at you because we have not addressed this sufficiently and we certainly haven't come even close to stopping it. And like many other forms of oppression, including racial aggression and exclusion, sexism requires silence to operate. I'm asking you to break that silence, 503-231-8187. Certainly, there are certain things we do not talk about, and one of them is how incredibly pervasive the intimidation enforced by rape can be. Rape is the enforcement mechanism of sexism, just as the sheriff's deputy's handguns are the ultimate enforcers of rent payment. You can only go so far in non-payment of rent before that deputy shows up. Likewise, women anywhere and everywhere find that rape and the brotherhood of silence about rape is the ultimate price to pay for demanding equality. Locker room talk is rape talk. And as I was saying, locker room talk isn't just in locker rooms. It's wherever guys get together. And if I had gotten what I hoped for last week, my interviewee would have responded with something on the order of, guys, we have to abandon locker room talk altogether. We have to be brave, sacrifice our place in male acceptance traditions, sacrifice our place in the male hierarchy, and that's very important. And that's part of testosterone brain, I suspect. I'm not putting down testosterone brain. Guys, I love you, but it's not about that. It's about this pattern of behavior. I want to hear you talk about it. I want to hear you being brave, calling me up, 503-231-8187. Now, if he had said that, that would have satisfied me. If he had said to confront this sort of talk every time it comes up, that's what needs to happen. But instead, he had obviously pain in his voice, as he sought to say that his prior contributions to rape culture should simply be obscured by the good work he is doing now, and that was painful to me. He is doing excellent work. I said to him, we are not the ones being hurt by this. He didn't respond. I said it worse. He plainly implied that the subject wasn't important. This is 51% of the population of the globe. Not important? I don't think so. This is important. Worse still, when I have discussed this on social media, I have encountered excuses for his failure. I will not accept that sort of dodge. I will not accept that sort of dodge. It's morally reprehensible. I will not accept, oh, that's just the way it was. I won't accept that was then, this is now, because right now women are being molested, put down, ignored, fired, excluded, belittled, subjected to sexist microaggressions on a constant basis, interrupted and talked over, and yes, raped, usually by someone they thought they could trust. That's the heartbreak, and that's the enforcement of toxic masculinity. My housemate pointed out to me that the Me Too controversy has quite an unfortunate side, that is, there is more than a mere distinction of degree between being talked over and excluded and being put down versus being brutally penetrated and violated, and I agree, and I apologize to her for giving her the impression that I equated that sort of thing that I equated the more general oppression with that kind of violence. Nevertheless, I must speak from my own experience if I hope to raise an authentic voice. I'm asking you to call 503-231-8187, and I'll go to the first caller. And Dave's on the air.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on and bringing up this really important topic. The Me Too campaign has been, as a male, good to see. Because it's so important to actually, like, physically see it, right? Like, it's invisible. It's supposed to be invisible because that's the way patriarchy works. It makes it so that we don't even have to think about it as men because it's not there. It's been forced out of the vision. And, I have to say, kind of corny, but hashtag I'm guilty, as a 30-year-old male, almost 31, I have been the oppressor throughout my life, and I acknowledge that and I accept that, and being aware of it helps me to better fight directly against patriarchy. And it's, I don't even know where I'm going with this besides that.
No, that was great. That's exactly what I was hoping to hear. That's what I have said, as I was saying, doubly ironic, because after all, I've lived as a woman since 2001 and found out my own way what that sort of thing means. And so, yeah, first we have to acknowledge that it is happening, that we all participate in it. I can say we, because I lived 41 years as a man, and that is about as much man as anyone can expect a transgender gal to be. And that's part of our identity, like whiteness. It's in the identity, and to confront it is almost existential, because you have to ask the question, well, if I'm not this, then what am I? What is maleness? That's okay. A little discomfort beats the hell out of being raped.
That's been such a lifelong quest for me to understand that, and now to be able to accept that what maleness is has nothing to do with what I've been taught or what's in front of me, because it's more like, what does it mean to be human? Because I have, you know, feminine characteristics. I don't abide by this manly man patriarchal vision. I've never done that. You know, I grew up with three women and saw how patriarchy creates depression, right? Like, depression is a symptom, and these mental health issues that and I would say that a large portion of women deal with is in part due to patriarchy, because of how it takes away the autonomy of femmes to be able to stand their ground and not be oppressed.
Oh, yeah. Like I was saying, to the point that you can't afford to have a drink by yourself, to the point that you can't afford to smile at someone that you pass on the street. You can't afford to. Hey, thanks very much for your call. That was excellent.
Thank you for having me on.
All right. So we're getting off to a good start here. Like I was saying, I must speak from my own experience if I hope to raise an authentic voice. So I'll tell you that someone I trusted right here in the halls of this radio station more than a decade ago helped himself to a humiliating grope of my then brand new homegrown breasts, and I got to experience the whole range of reactions, starting with myself, with my own paralysis as I fought to integrate what had just happened, the trust that had just been broken, with my previous concept of reality. And then I discovered for myself how hard it was to talk about it, to get sympathy or even an ear, that I just needed a witness at the time. And I heard so many excuses for that man, and it was years before he was kicked out for doing that sort of thing over and over. A common story, isn't it? I don't have to convince the women. And worse things happened to me when I was small, innocent, a feminine boy whose suffering just didn't count in the locker room fiefdom of real men. So I'm doubling down today. This is time to fight. The number to call, 503-231-8187. And we do have phone lines available. 503-231-8187. And let's see. Let me check and see if we have someone waiting to talk. Hi there. Is it Renee?
Renee? Hi. Mm-hmm.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well.
I really appreciate what you're talking about. I actually just turned on the radio and heard it and felt really compelled to call and say thanks, and thanks for the comment of the previous caller as well. I think what I wanted to say is that I think often that this conversation gets split into binaries very easily, and that men, I think, are really damaged a lot by this false binary as well. And there have been some recent studies looking at emotional qualities of boys and girls, and showing that actually, in general, boys are a lot more sensitive and need a lot more affection and closeness. And that as a socialized culture, we teach men that they can't be masculine and vulnerable, or, you know, seek affection with other men or women that aren't their moms or their girlfriends. They're not given tools or taught about that. And so with, you know, with that kind of influence, and then on top of that, more messaging that comes in that says to be masculine is to be all of these other things, is very aggressive. We're cutting people off from their own humanity and from their own soul. And I think with, you know, with people who are socialized as female as well, there's often a huge split that then perpetuates patriarchy. There are so many women that police each other and kind of split within themselves to justify or validate behavior that is demeaning towards them, but then they don't want to hurt the person that was behaving in that way because it's someone that they love. And that there's just so much complexity that isn't taken into account in these very dichotomous mind states that gender is a part of. And, you know, I think having trans awareness is something that everyone should strive for in some ways, that the trans people are a lot of the new leaders who can show us, remind us what it is to be spectrums and to have a lot of different instincts and sensitivities and desires and motivations, and that those don't have to be confined to one single gender.
That's some powerful thinking, and it's what I was hoping for when I was asking for calls. Yeah, I don't know about leadership, but I've been on both sides of this coal mine, and it was a gradual thing. You know, you can't just be a woman by saying, okay, now I'm a woman, both in terms of social roles and whatever the essence of these things are in the human experience. I am actually...
Well, I think what makes a good leader is empathy, you know, and the fact that you have experienced both sides is, I mean, it's rare and it's remarkable, and then it's powerful because you can actually speak to both sides.
Yeah, that's where I'm hoping to go with this. And I'm hoping to use my male voice to appeal to men and say, look, been on both sides. When you hear from women that you talk over them, yeah, you talk over them. When you hear that no one takes women seriously, that there's a glass ceiling, yeah, there really is. And maybe it helps to have a baritone voice, socialized as male, saying that. Anything more?
No, thank you.
Thank you very much for calling in. Okay, so I'm talking about patriarchy. I'm talking about Me Too. I'm talking about this conversation that I had last week, which, you know, once again opened my eyes to the fact that patriarchy, sexism, and rape culture depend so much on denying that there is patriarchy, sexism, and rape culture. How pervasive it is, how powerful it is, how it warps and controls our society, how confining it is for men. And as I was saying earlier, I have also benefited by finding out that women are willing to open up to me as human beings, as a transgender person, and finding out just how deep the distrust of men is, for good reason, for good reason. Number call 503-231-8187. Changing groupthink is very difficult. Imagine, instead of things being the way they are, that no one had heard of, say, coffee, and there was only a small group of dedicated coffee activists who are importing the beans, roasting them, making big tureens, and offering free samples to commuters for the first time. What is this hot black stuff trying to get to that big candy mountain in the sky where everyone had a cup of coffee in their hand all morning, and there were 400 varieties of latte, and people would stand in line, crazy idea, for $5 for a cup. It would be a long, hard slog from no coffee, no one heard of it, to what we live now. No one would believe it'd be possible to create such a maniacal coffee utopia or dystopia or whatever it is. But of course, we lived that, and there was a time when it was not so, and it has been done. Certainly, auto transportation was a conscious and hard-fought choice, brought to you by General Motors, Firestone, and Standard Oil, who, with other conspiracists, yes, conspiracists, there really are conspiracies, bought out bus and streetcar lines in order to scrap them in the 1930s and 40s, and they paid developers and architects to create the automobile suburb. It didn't just happen. There were activists, very, very well-paid activists, determined people with a vision, who brought you the incredible pollution and death that we experience from automobile culture. By the way, you're taught in college to sneer at those revelations as conspiracy theory, but the convictions went through, and an honest analysis shows exactly what happened and how it was done. So see the film Taken for a Ride by Martha Olson and Jim Klein. The conversion of the population, for example, to smartphone cyborgs, you are, I am, come on. It has elements of the same story. It's a powerful group deciding to change society's shape for its own profits, right down to ripping out almost every single payphone. Yeah, there's a reason you can't find a payphone. And no, it didn't just happen. But if you'd like to look at positive examples of what people can do, not having nuclear detonations in the clear air of the Pacific Ocean and the Nevada test site every week, raining down strontium and cesium and plutonium, etc., is a conscious choice that we owe to our great-grandmothers, who are now mostly passed on without thanks for their efforts. Ban the Bomb was a women's movement led by Dr. Louise Rice, who collected 30,000 baby teeth and proved to Congress, who were shocked, that these teeth were chock-full of radioactive strontium. I lost a friend to bone cancer, strontium bone cancer, when I was 11 years old. And we still have that strontium in our bodies. But we have much less because women got together and decided to change things. So though it is difficult, groupthink can be changed, either by great financial resources or by determined activists. And this is what I'm calling for. This is why I'm asking you to call in now. I want to hear your stories. I want to hear your thoughts. I want to talk about patriarchy, sexism, and rape culture. And I want to challenge you to be brave, men and women, to be brave and to step into this world, as I was complaining last week. That was a fail. It was so common, though, that people, I was talking about it on social media, and it just wasn't sparking. I was like, look at this thing just happened. I was outraged. I went out in the street and screamed. Really, I thought I was going to get arrested. I've been arrested for screaming before. I screamed at the wrong person. I screamed at a couple of property owners who are aggressing on me. That's a long story, never mind. But that's how, you know, that's how berserk I felt. And then I found that there's so much momentum. There's so much power. That locomotive I was talking about has so much momentum that most of the reactions that I got on this on social media were just like, well, yeah, that's the way it is, all right. I'm not accepting that. Not accepting it. Please call in 503-231-8187, and I'll take the next caller. Alex. Hi, Alex.
Hi. My name is Alex. I am a 22-year-old cis male Filipino-American who is half white, and I grew up in Hawaii. I moved here about 4 years ago. In Hawaii, I met someone whom I very deeply love, and since then, the things you said about confinement speaks to me, I guess, because it's very difficult terrain to navigate in order to make choices which don't harm women as a man. And I just want to thank you for doing what you're doing and for embodying such empathy. In order to allow other people to get in on the discussion. I called it the half hour mark earlier because I was worried that nobody was calling you, and it's such an important thing to talk about. And I wish that I could participate in a discussion, but really I just need to send a message because I can't. If I hold my phone up too longer, I will get a police ticket for calling you while driving, despite my attention. The police ticket I can't pay, so I just want to thank you. I want to thank the caller previous to me, the woman, because she spoke a lot of truth about binaries and how easy it is to get stuck in binaries when it comes to conversations. I want to thank the guy who called before her, who was saying that who's just expressing how difficult it is to be a man, I guess. And I want to thank you for also pointing out the parallel between that and being white, because that's such an important connection that I didn't discover being half white until sometime into my relationship. And not only I wasn't able to discover it until after we went through some difficult things. So I just want to thank you, and that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thanks for calling in. Yeah, and sure, pull over. Pull over before calling, please. What can I say? I'm living on my pension now, my pension and my partner's salary from being a professional driver. And it brings up that fact. It's like no one made a choice. No one said to the population of the United States, hey, look, we've got this great system of transportation. It'll pollute the entire globe to the point that we'll be destroying the entire globe's ecosystem. And it'll kill 30,000, 40,000 Americans per year. And grievously injure hundreds of thousands more. But it's just a great feeling of freedom. You'll be able to just hop in a vehicle and go across. What do you say? You want to do that? Do you think people would buy that? It wasn't done that way. But what I was saying is you can get, we moved from one place to another place. We can change things. When you see a murmuration of starlings or pigeons whirl in the air, you create those beautiful flowing shapes. You know, look, they're making a little tornado. You're seeing democracy in action. You know, the scientists who study these things have discovered that each animal is watching the others. They do this very quickly. Their synapses are very quick. And when a critical mass decides it is best to pursue, say, a small cloud of insects or whatever it is that they want to do, the group collectively decides on that movement almost instantaneously. It happens so quickly that special photography is needed to spot the first deciders amongst those pigeons. So imagine what would happen if that poor flock of pigeons was watching their individual cell phones instead. This is a critical moment in time. And we are being oppressed by our habits, by hierarchies that go back centuries. And also we are under attack, as I was saying, from the elites who control our means of communication. But we also have access to that, and we have to know what's happening. That's why KBOO Community Radio is so important to you. We have to do the hard work to change our direction. We can't hope for a better society if we remain willfully ignorant of the ways we neglect and abuse each other. Half of the human race is asking for acknowledgement and relief of their suffering right now, and that half lives with you or is you. Women, through the Me Too campaign, are asking us all to see what is in front of us, to acknowledge it, to address it, and change it. Male sexual aggression and male social aggression is killing children, grotesquely degrading women's lives, breaking the minds and hearts of half of humanity, and confining and constricting and driving crazy all of humanity, and doing that to men as well. It'll take men and women to stop it. But we've got to put the blame where it belongs on men who, in their exclusive groups, whether in the military or the boardroom or the fraternity house or the sports team or the corporate break room, decide and agree that they will celebrate and promote the degradation of women. So I'm asking you to look at that one aspect of it. And I'm asking men to say, okay, from now on, I'm going to pay the cost. I'm going to confront that every time. Even though it'll feel hypocritical at first because all men are part of it. And I lived 41 years as a male, and I was part of it. Hell yeah. Number to call, 503-231-8187. And Jessica is on the air.
Hi, Teresa.
Hi.
I just wanted to say, first off, my husband and I love listening to your show, and I've never gotten to call in before. And I want to say that every time you sit, everything that you speak about just really touches my own personal life. And, you know, I'm a 37-year-old female mother of two boys, and I had an interesting moment at the grocery store the other day where this old man comes up to me and tells me that I have two well-behaved boys. And I laugh and say, ha-ha, we're just having a good day. And he, you know, he says something else, and then I realize that I stopped and I was like, you know, I was like, all I want in life is to raise two good boys that are good to women and that know how to treat other people, including all women, their mothers, their sisters, the lady on the street. And then I realized, as a mom and as a woman who has been harassed in her youth, that is what I can do. And I have, and to have, and to force my husband to also see that and be, let our boys be sensitive, because that's what they need. We are all sensitive human beings, and I think we just forget that we're allowed to feel real feelings and be real people. And that's where like the, you know, and the author that you spoke with, I heard that, I was listening to that when I was at work. And all I could hear in his brain is like, well, I can't, you know, if I accept it too much, then I'm just shaming myself for something. I didn't know better back then. Okay, well, you didn't know better back then, but you do now. So now's your time to say, like, that was wrong. I should have never done that. I'm learning from this. I'm going to tell other people not to do that. So I understand why it just felt like he could have just stepped up and really owned it. But he
thank you. I'm going to have to let you have the final word there because I have run out of time.
I'm sorry.
Thank you so much for... No. No, that was excellent. Thank you very much for calling in. It's 9:58. One last thing. On October 24th, 1975, Icelandic women went on strike for the day to demonstrate the indispensable work of women for Iceland's economy and society. 90% of the female population went on strike, did not go to their paid jobs, did not do any housework or child rearing for the whole day, and it changed Icelandic society. At 10 o'clock, coming up, it's Flashpoints, Investigative News Radio with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, Between the Covers, Todd Davies will be live in the studio. And 11:30, Words and Pictures, Portland Art Museum, Animating Life. You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland, going out to you via the main transmitter at 90.7 FM, other frequencies in Cascadia, and via KBOO.FM to all the ships at sea.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Outside the Frame's film screening of Leaving Home on Monday, November 13th at 6 p.m. at Portland Center Stage at the Armory in Portland. Outside the Frame will be hosting a special gala screening of new films by and with youth experiencing homelessness in Portland. The evening will also feature a Q&A with the filmmakers, and a Lifetime Achievement Award will be presented to Tia Plimpton to recognize her decades of work and mentorship with homeless youth. Again, that's Outside the Frame's film screening of Leaving Home on Monday, November 13th at 6 p.m. at Portland Center Stage at the Armory, 128 Northwest 11th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is David Barsamian of Alternative Radio, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
Flashpoints: Trump in Asia for talks in South Korea, Japan, China, Vietnam, and other